up, everybody? Welcome back into another episode of Cult Film Cafe Does Halloween. Yes, it is me, Jonathan, one of the hosts, and as always, I am joined by my partner in crime, Kenzie McLean.
Hello there.
So on this episode, if you haven't already guessed it from the previous episode, we will be taking a look at the 1980 slasher film Friday the 13th, directed by Sean S. Cunningham.
I'd have this dream. I'm in a thunderstorm, and it's raining really hard. It sounds like pebbles when it hits the ground. I try to block out the sound with my hands, only it doesn't work. It just keeps getting louder and louder. And the rain turns to blood.
It's just a dream.
Ah! Are you crazy?
We ain't gonna stand for no weirdness out here.
Hello?
Did you know that a young boy drowned here?
Help me!
His name was Jason, and today is his birthday.
Help me!
This place is cursed. You're doomed if you stay here.
Help me!
It's not funny anymore! Not funny at all! They're both dead!
And he's still there.
So yeah, the past couple episodes, you might have got a sense of what film might be coming up, and you might have a sense of what film might be on the next episode. But nonetheless, we are here to talk about Friday the 13th. I am assuming that because we watched this one together, that it's a first watch for both of us.
Yeah, I've never fully seen this Friday the 13th film.
Does that mean that you've fully seen the 2009 reboot?
I've seen bits of that one. I've seen bits of like all the Friday the 13th films, but I've never actually seen any of them fully. But I have fully seen Freddy vs. Jason, which, by the way, is a good laugh, and I do recommend that film. But it's not that great, but it's quite fun. But so yeah, so bar that, which I have seen full, I've only seen bits and bobs from other films. This one is probably one of the ones I knew probably the least about in certain aspects.
Yeah, this one is one I wanted to swerve, if I'm being perfectly honest with you. I've never really been interested in the Friday the 13th franchise or Jason Voorhees as a killer or villain, however you would describe him in the horror genre. He's the one that I'm least familiar with, and I'm probably never wanting to revisit this film or any other Friday the 13th or even the Freddy vs. Jason crossover, because my golly gosh, this film was not very good.
No, it really wasn't. Like I already said before going into it that this is probably going to be the worst of the four, and I still kind of feel that way. Although I really didn't like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, this is also I can somewhat see at the time that Texas Chainsaw Massacre could be seen as quite good. I bet at the time that this film came out, it would still be seen as being pretty bad. Like, even at the time, I don't know. It's probably the first of the slashers to start getting quite gruesome, because compared to the other two, there wasn't actually that much blood in the both of them, although there is some quite nasty moments in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This one goes for more kind of blood gore. That's the one compared to how the series goes. The series gets much gorier, but like for this one compared to the other first films, yeah, it's quite a bit more gory. But so if you like that, I guess that's a kind of thing you might like. But the films, it's just it's really not very good. I kind of expected it to be. It was actually in a way worse than I expected it to be, and that's quite shocking because I was at my expectations were low.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really expecting a lot, didn't really get a lot out of it. It's not really one of the best that we've watched over the course of the month, I'm sad to say. There'll be a lot of fans of this franchise out there and probably stand by this film, but for me, compared to the other two, this is not anywhere near as good. Well, in fact, Texas and this share a bit of, you know, mediocrity, but I mean, Halloween is leagues better than these films, and maybe that's just an opinion that I have because I really enjoy Halloween. I think it still holds up across the board, and I think that's due to the fact that there's no gearing effects used really in the film. I think in this there's some effects that have aged quite significantly, specifically the kill on Kevin Bacon's character. That looks like it's came straight out of a low budget movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of things quite bad about that effect. Starting the fact that it's not like about the time it might have looked quite good, I guess. But it's suddenly you see this kind of spear come through the back of his throat, and you can just look, if you just look, his whole body is a complete different colour from his head. So you can clearly tell they've done some sort of thing, and they've got like a dummy body, and he's just like slid his head and like through something to sit on top of it, if you know what I mean. So it just looks a bit silly.
Yeah, I mean, it does. You can tell that it's not the same person. The neck looks a bit elongated and stuff. Yeah, and I mean, there is a lot of blood in this film. Like Kenji said, it's one of these where it sort of crossed over the sort of gore and slasher genre. It is a slasher film, but it is more gory. You do get to see a lot of blood in the killings, and there is sort of no holds barred in terms of, even when it comes to the first one, not right at the start of the film, when there's like a flashback that starts the film, and then we go into modern day for this film, present day. But the first girl that gets killed, I mean, she gets her throat slit, and that stays on screen, and you see the cut and stuff, and you know. I think if that was somebody else, or maybe a different person, they might have just, you seen the knife in the neck and, you know, it's starting, it might have cut away. But yeah. Well, at least this is, at least as far as I've read, that this film wasn't trying to get a PG-13 or a PG rating.
Yeah.
At least they weren't going that route, and maybe that's when they went, fuck it, you know, we know we're getting an R-rated, why not put as much shit in it as we possibly can. So yeah, it is quite gruesome at times. But yeah, it's like I said, I think a lot of these films have been pretty simple in terms of narrative and sort of structure, and you know, I think a lot of these low budget sort of films that are basically taking place in one location for the most part, you know, Texas, pretty much one location. I know there's a bit of driving in that, but when they get there for the hour that they're in that vicinity, that's where they are. And Halloween, I mean, it's pretty much Haddonfield for the whole time, although there is some bits elsewhere, but very, very few. And this is the same. It's based in, was it Camp something?
Crystal Lake.
Camp Crystal Lake, which is actually named Camp Blood by the locals, which there's a town, and I think it's, what did they say, about 10 miles outside, or about 10 miles away. It's about a 10-mile journey from the nearest town to the camp, I think. I think we get that reference at the start of the film. So yeah, so then it, basically the rest of the film takes place there. Once we get to the camp, we've don't really leave it, apart from a couple of scenes. The diner scene and, you know, the stuff at the start with Alice. That's pretty much it. So I think that's what they do to keep the cost down, and it's great. I mean, one location, it does actually work. I quite like the location. It's actually a real camp that, you know, I was reading about that. It's actually a real camp. It still actually is operational today, which is quite cool. I mean, why wouldn't it be? It's been in a movie, so it's probably quite popular with people, or, you know, I don't know if it's tourists that go or if it's genuinely a camp for young people.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd want to go to that camp, but yeah, that's fair. I can just see someone one day going, I'm just going to start murdering people there just because it's in a film.
I I mean, I don't think rational people would think.
No, no, rational people wouldn't. But I just,
I get what you're saying.
I don't want to risk it.
Yeah, so I mean, the camp's pretty much been run down since 1957 in the film, and then I think we jumped to present day, which is 1979. So yeah. Well, no, in fact, 1958 to 1979. 1957 was the young boy that drowned in the lake, which we later find out was Jason. Spoiler alert, sorry, but it's an old film if you haven't seen it. You probably have anyway, but yeah. So, yeah, and I think what's happened is the son of the family's renovating it to reopen it as a camp, much to the dismay of the local townspeople, and there's, you know, young people coming to help, you know, to be camp counsellors. So yeah, and that's where we meet all the main characters, you know, Bill, Marcy, Brenda, and Jack, and Ned. We have Alice, but Alice gets killed off pretty quick. She's the kind of sparky young blood, you know, that asks for a lift from the townsfolk, you know. Lo and behold, she gets bumped off first just because she had all that spunk.
Yeah, I was expecting her to be like in a main, and then nah. She's the first one you're introduced to, and you kind of follow her for quite a bit, but then she never actually makes it to the camp.
I think I've got my names mixed up. That was Annie that I meant to say.
Oh, is that Annie? Right, okay.
Alice is the main. She's like blonde. She's the one that survives.
Yeah.
But Annie, they're so close to names. Annie, sorry. I meant to say Annie.
Yeah.
Yeah, she dies relatively quick. I wasn't expecting it.
Neither was I.
Do you know, actually, during her death scene, that it wasn't actually Betsy Palmer that was doing it, because they started filming before casting Betsy Palmer in the role as Mrs. Voorhees. Because they had other people in mind, somebody dropped out, and then eventually Betsy Palmer took the part. But for that kill, it was actually a crew member's hand that we see. Because I kind of wondered, because the hand at that stage is very masculine. I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's quite a big hand.
Yeah.
So I think if you've seen it, you'll know what I mean. I'm not saying that women can't have big hands in it. I just mean it doesn't look like Betsy Palmer's hand or Mrs. Voorhees' hand. But yeah, so that is the case. But yeah, I mean, I'm struggling for things to say in terms of what I like. I feel the same about this film as Kenzie feels about Texas Chainsaw Massacre. See, I quite like Texas Chainsaw Massacre but quite a bit more than Kenzie, and I probably think that he likes this a bit more than me. So I'm just struggling with this one, you know. I don't really find that there's much to interest me in this film, you know. And, you know, after coming off the back of Halloween, which was an incredibly short film and looks really, really good today, this kind of is a bit of a downgrade, which is quite surprising, because these films over the time have increased in budget, so they've went up in scale each time. So you mean Texas had a relatively low budget of under $150,000. Halloween was like $300,000. And then you've got this, which was like 500, 550. So it's quite a significant jump. I just don't think you can see it when you watch it.
It looks cheaper than Halloween. Like, definitely, it looks cheaper. It looks like it was cheaper made. But it wasn't. It just doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't look great. And like I said, even like all the practical effects in it all have aged quite a lot. Anytime you see like a body that's been like got an axe in the face or something like that, it just looks like a big rubber body. It's 1980, so fair enough, but like it is quite bad. There's not a lot to, I don't know, this film, doesn't have a lot going for it. It's, you get to Crystal Lake, and then it's like, oh, there's, you can kind of see the POV like of someone watching, which is the villain, which ends up being Mrs. Voorhees. And then some people start getting killed off, and then that's kind of the film. It's kind of like everyone cutting about doing their thing, and then like another one will die, and like another one will die. So it's like a kind of what you'd expect, kind of, from a slasher. And it seemed like, okay, if it keeps like that, that should be okay for the rest of the film. But then once they work through most of the people, so there's only two people left, the main woman and the other guy, the film just like stops, and the last two people, although he, I guess he doesn't last too much longer, but her specifically, that last part, it's like 30 minutes worth that was left of the film or something like that, that drags like real bad, and literally nothing happens. It's like the film fully goes to a stop, and you just follow her going to like make some tea, or like I don't even know what she was doing, and then like, the killer doesn't even come in to like attacking her until like quite a bit later. And once she does, there's a lot of faffing about of her hiding in the house, and he's there, she's hiding, and then what, the killer just disappears, and eventually you meet Mrs. Voorhees after that, and then you get the whole final part of her and Mrs. Voorhees fighting, and that's rough as well, because it's so silly. Like, the amount of times that, what's the main character's name again?
Alice.
The amount of times that Alice overpowers Mrs. Voorhees and knocks her to the ground, and then just runs away. And then, like, a minute later, Mrs. Voorhees is back attacking again. Knocks her back to the ground, runs off. I'm pretty sure that happens at least twice, but might actually happen three times.
Yeah, but I think the thing is these characters aren't killers. I mean, they don't want to kill people, you know. Mrs. Voorhees wants to genuinely kill people, so she's got a motive. I think that's maybe what's at play here. You know, if you knock something around, you think you can get away. I mean, they don't do a very good job of trying to get away. That's one of the main problems. But then I suppose it all kind of comes full circle when she does have to eventually kill Mrs. Voorhees. And that, my God, that affects Silly.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm actually not sure that she could cut through her whole neck with the blade that she does it with. It's not like she was using a samurai sword.
Unless it, if it was sharpened enough, but no, they probably wouldn't have. But there's possibly, like, sharpish object, that'll cut someone's head off.
I mean, it is a machete, right enough, apparently, according to this. It just, I mean, it doesn't look massive, but anyway. Yeah, like, the effects are a bit dated, you know. Like, aye, the pacing's a big issue. Me and Kenzie both have an issue with that. You know, it kind of was going along, you know, introduction to the film sort of built up, you know, you kind of got to the scene and, you know, you ended up cutting back to, I think they do a good job as well, because I thought that when Annie was getting picked up, it was actually Steve, the camp owner, because it looked like his truck. Turns out that the villain and him have a similar truck. It must just be the vehicle of choice for round about that area. But yeah, so, and then obviously it turns out that it wasn't. And you can realise that quite quickly, you know. But, yeah, and then it does kill people off relatively quick. But, yeah, like Ken said, yeah, it does kind of have a standstill when it's only Bill and Alice left.
And, like, it really stops. It really feels like the film completely comes to a halt. It's just straight up boring. Like, I was somewhat finding the film mesh. Like, I was getting through it. That last part really killed it for me. There's like, and of course, this film doesn't even have like the everyone's fan, one of everyone's favourite villains, Jason Voorhees, in it. Jason Voorhees doesn't actually become the killer of the Friday the 13th franchise until the second film, which I feel like some people probably don't even know that. I don't know if everyone's seen the first film, but for people who have, they'll know that. But for all people who haven't, they won't even know that Jason Voorhees is not the killer in the first film. And yeah, that kind of sucks, because the mother, she, the acting from her is fine, but she's not in it very, she's in it very little, and that's about it. And then, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jason does make a cameo at the end of the film, yeah, it's one of those. We were talking on the Black Phone episode of the podcast about the jump scare in it, and this jump scare got me. I knew it was coming as well, because I said it out loud when I was watching the film, but it still caught me. I really don't like the end of the film either, because the kind of narrative kind of falls in on itself, because it's like she gets pulled under the water, and then it cuts to her waking up in a hospital. And I'm like, so what is that implying? That she was dreaming? Or that the end part of her in a canoe didn't happen? What stuff happened, what didn't? I don't really know what to make of it.
Yeah, it got kind of confusing, because I thought that it just ended with her getting pulled into the water. It doesn't. It ends with her, after getting pulled into the water by Jason, she wakes up, and you're like, whoa, so that was that part, last part, just a dream, but she's in the hospital, everything else did happen. And it also does seem like she was also pulled into the water by Jason, because she was found in the lake, I think.
It doesn't really show you the police on the shore, but
yeah,
Jason pulling her in. But then they were like, oh, we couldn't find the person that you're talking about. And I'm like, well, surely if they managed to get her out without her drowning, which they did, surely they would have came across something. But I suppose this is just how these films work sometimes, that things can't really be explained. But yeah, there's a lot of negatives to this film, sorry to say that for me. I don't really like much of this film at all. I can appreciate it as what it is and what it's trying to do, but for me it's just a no-go. Like, definitely not something I would recommend for you to go and watch. But I've probably already watched it if you're a fan of this series of podcasts that we're doing. And if not, if you're into slasher films, definitely check it out, give it a go. But yeah, it's a struggle. It was a real, real struggle for me.
I mean, yeah, the end part really made me struggle, really, especially. But overall, the film was not great. Just that last part brought it down even further for me. So yeah, I'll try and stay away from this film. I do want to watch the other Friday the 13th films, because I bet they are better. I think this franchise finds its footing a bit better as the series goes on, because it gets into they kind of realize their films are not great, and so they kind of make them more, give more of what people kind of want to see in them, so they kind of make it more creative and goofy kills, more violence. They just made the villain Jason every time, who is a silent killer. Everyone likes Jason. It's just, so pretty much everyone who's going to see a Friday the 13th film is there to see Jason kill a bunch of teenagers. And that's pretty much what the franchise became. This one tried to have a little bit more story to it, and yeah, it doesn't really work. I think they realised what they were making. So I think the other films go a bit sillier with it and kind of do what they do, and I think it works better in those films. I think, like I said, I've not fully seen any of them, but that's all I can really say. I bet most people who like the Friday the 13th franchise probably miss this one out.
That's a bold claim.
It's a very bold claim, but I've got a feeling that that could be the case.
I mean, it's not a shock to me to see its Rotten Tomatoes score currently 63% tomato meter and a 60% audience score. It's the lowest by far of the slashers that we're going to discuss, well, the OG or older slashers that we're going to discuss on the podcast, by quite a sizable jump, really, it's fair to say. Yeah, I mean, the film was inspired by Halloween. I think this is the whole reason that a film like this got greenlit. You know, the director was basically looking for a way to make his film successful, and obviously Halloween was really successful and stuff like that. And I mean, he went out his way to start advertising the film in Variety magazine before the film had even been picked up and financed. He put a release date of November 1979, which was never ever going to happen because he never had any funding in place. But I mean, the film was released a year later, so he wasn't that far out. Initially, the film is actually going to be called Long Night at Camp Blood instead of Friday the 13th. How do you feel about that? I quite like that name.
It sounds, it's got a kind of nice ring to it, I guess, eh?
Yep.
Maybe it's like an old style film, it's like, ooh, it sounds kind of spooky.
Well, it was a long night and it is Camp Blood, so I quite like that. I know, I mean, it's predicated on this Friday the 13th and everybody knows the connotation around Friday the 13th, everybody knows that, but I mean, maybe it should have had its own unique title. I don't know, but then again, are they just doing a play because John Carpenter done Halloween, set his film on Halloween, and it all sort of makes sense to go off Friday the 13th? Do we just set these on Friday the 13th and it kind of makes sense? And it does in a way as well. So it's maybe a cheap way to get a really recognisable title, but obviously people will remember it and they still do to this day. So
I don't know if I've got any more to say. I don't know about you.
No, I think I've said quite a bit of things about it, you know, in terms of, well, for all you film lovers, I was going to say, for all you music lovers out there, I'm not going to talk about the film's soundtrack, because to me, it's not really that memorable apart from the silly kind of whispery sounds that are, so it's like, that's a combination of K.I. from Kill and M.A. from Mother. That's what I've read here, you know, that's how it's pronounced, and it's just very abruptly said. But during the filming, so the camp that they used is a real camp, so they got into the facility after all that year's campers had left for the summer, so they got the tail end of the summer to shoot. But this is quite fun. I would have quite liked to have been on this filming process, because Lou Reed, the famous rock star, actually owned a nearby farm and actually came to play for free for them as some light entertainment on nights between shooting, which I think is quite cool. And what an absolute great man Lou Reed was. And if you don't know who Lou Reed is, go and check him out. Really good musician. But yeah, I think that is it for this episode. So yeah, we'll just move quickly on to the ratings, where we rate everything that we speak about out of 5 popcorn buckets. And Kenzie, it's your turn to go first.
I had low expectations for this film, and somehow this film still managed to get under my expectations. Fucking this series, yeah. This is out of all the kind of slasher, this is the bottom of the barrel one. And I think this film, I don't think this film was made in that being in the mind. Whereas I feel like the future films, they knew what they were and just went, we're bad films, but we'll just do it. And people did, although they've got bad ratings, a lot of people do actually enjoy the films for being kind of fun bad. This one just didn't really do that. It was just kind of, for the most part, boring bad, which is not great. It wasn't really fun. It was like all right. I would say kind of below meh. It's watchable. And then that last part really kills it for me. So I'm probably going to rate this. Yeah, I'm probably going to rate this the same as, yeah, I'm going to rate it the same as Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I'm going to give it a 1.5. I feel like this one probably deserves the 1.5 more than Texas Chainsaw. And this one had, so much more budget. And just, it should have been better, but it just wasn't. So yeah, I'm giving that 1.5. It's not, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, from the highs of Halloween to the lows of Friday the 13th, it is probably one of my least favourite films that I have watched over this series. It's got a lot of problems that I just cannot forgive it for. You know, I think the thing about Texas Chainsaw Massacre is, for its flaws, and I didn't really see that many because of how it paved the way for a lot of things. And, you know, the reason the film looks the way it does and stuff is all predicated to budget and stuff like that. And when you realise that this film had a budget that was 5 times bigger, I know that the effects used, you know, they were trying to go somewhere with the sort of special effects and the sort of makeup and stuff. But yeah, it's heavily dated now, 40 years down the line. So yeah, I probably won't revisit this film again, and I'm probably not inclined to check out any of the sequels. So yeah, sadly, I am going to be a bit more forgiving. I'm going to give this a 2. I gave Texas a 3. I'll give this a 2 because I think it's the worst one. But I'm not going to go under that. I mean, I don't think it's as bad as things like Paranormal Activity or The Grudge or Event Horizon for me. I know Kenzie likes that film, but, you know, I would still watch this over a few of the films on the sort of list that we've done, because it is a slasher film and you know what you're getting, so it is enjoyable. If you just want something this Halloween to stick on that's relatively short, I mean, it's an hour and a half and there's some people getting killed in it. It's a bit more gory than sort of Halloween or Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and you want that element, then yeah, give it a watch. But yeah, and maybe take our opinions of it with a pinch of salt, because I know that there will be a lot of fans of the franchise out there. So yeah, it's a 2 from me. It's a 1.5 for Kenzie. So yeah, it's the end of the podcast episode. And it's actually been quite a pleasure. I do like talking about films, and so does Kenzie. So it's great to even talk about films that we don't like and kind of get a sense of why we don't like them. And if you would like to check out past episodes, you can do so by just searching for Cult Film Cafe. We have a unique Google search, so you'll be able to find us if you just type it into Google. And if you'd like to go and give us a wee follow over on Twitter and Instagram, it's just @CultFilmCafe on both of them. And if you'd like to email us, you can email thecultfilmpodcast@gmail.com. So yeah, it's another episode down. A few more to go. We've been ramping up this month for the daily uploads. I hope you're all enjoying them. Yeah, and we've enjoyed doing them. And we've got another special something coming around the corner, but more on that in the future. So yeah, it's a goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Podcast out.